I managed to pull myself together with huge effort in a couple of hours, and I continued working. This is how it all started. Of course, much still remains to be understood, verified, and tested. These results are spectacular to a conventional mindset, leading most to conclude Dr. Grebennikov must be lying. But already we are seeing an effect consistent with our model. When he put the tack in the direct center of the vortex current created by the insect's wing casing, the tack's atoms all popped over into time-space, and it seemingly disappeared. In a 2005 issue of New Energy Technologies, we find out that although Grebennikov never disclosed the exact genus and species of the insect he discovered this effect with, he does make multiple mentions in his book about the remarkable properties of the wing cases for scarabaeus, bronze poplar borer, and particularly Cetonia. There are 5 species of bronze poplar borer that have an unusual honeycomb pattern on the inside of their wing cases, similar to his description. So if you really love Mother Nature, you just might learn something. Some folks here on Earth have apparently been aware of these dueling gravitational forces for thousands and thousands of years, and the techniques to overcome normal downward gravitational flow by understanding how to speed up the spiraling motion within the source field to create currents that push in a different direction. This appears to be the great secret of how the pyramids were built. However, we still haven't really answered our deeper question. How do we pop enough atoms over into time-space to actually make an object levitate? Once again, an old friend comes to the rescue: coherence. We need to bring the frequency inside the atom to a point that is faster than light speed, so it then pops over into time-space. This can be done by creating a harmonic pulsation in the source field, in gravity. So, if we want the magic to happen, all we have to do is start vibrating an object or a given area with the right frequencies. Then, by creating coherence in that area, some of the atoms will start popping over the light speed boundary, where they then get pushed on by what we call levity. Tibetan acoustic levitation. This might sound complicated, but the actual techniques are easy once you know what you're doing, and hardly any technology is required to create the coherence. The most intriguing example I've ever discovered is called Tibetan acoustic levitation, and this is another piece of weird science that I struggled for years to understand. This comes to us from Henry Chelsen, a Swedish aircraft designer who described the whole story to a journalist who then published it in a German magazine. A truly groundbreaking New Zealand researcher named Bruce Cathy then wrote a detailed analysis of it in David Hatcher Chodras's Anti-Gravity and the World Grid. Henry Chelsen was a close friend and colleague of a medical doctor also from Sweden who chose to be identified only as Dr. Jarl. According to Chelsen, Dr. Jarl befriended a young Tibetan student while he studied at Oxford. When Dr. Jarl was later paid to visit Egypt by a scientific society in England, his Tibetan friend found out and sent a messenger to find him. The message was very good. Dr. Jarl's friend had become a trusted member of the monastery, and now a high Tibetan Lama said he wanted to meet Dr. Jarl urgently. Apparently, Dr. Jarl then got permission to stay in Tibet for a fairly long time, take notes, and report back on what he found. While he was there, Dr. Jarl got to see a variety of things that few Westerners had ever been allowed to witness before. The greatest secret of all, according to Swedish engineer Olaf Alexanderson, was that a vibrating and condensed sound field can nullify the power of gravitation. Other experts on Tibet, including Linever, Spalding, and Hui, had heard about the Tibetans using sound to levitate gigantic stones, and Dr. Jarl had also heard about these legends, but he was the first Westerner to witness it. Dr. Jarl was led into a sloping meadow that was surrounded by high cliffs to the northwest. One of the cliffs had a ledge that led into a cave, some 250 meters above the ground. The Tibetans were in the process of building a wall out of huge stone blocks up on this ledge, but there was no way to get there except by climbing straight up on a rope. About 250 meters away from the cliff, there was a polished rock slab that had a bowl-shaped area carved out of the middle of it. The slab was a meter wide, and the bowl area was 15 centimeters deep. Then, a team of yak oxen hauled a giant stone block into the bowl. The stone was incredibly huge. It was a full meter high and a meter and a half long. Here's the weird part. A perfect quarter circle arc, 90 degrees, was set up with 13 drums and 6 trumpets, all aiming at the stone. All the drums were made of 3 millimeter thick sheet iron, and instead of any type of animal skin for a head, there was metal on the end that the monks beat with leather clubs. The other end was left open,